Well, thank you, Farie, for those very kind words of introduction, and thank you also to the UNSW Business School for organising this event. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning to discuss the availability of business finance in Australia. Businesses, they need funding for their day-to-day operations as well as to undertake investment. These funds can be generated internally from profits, or they can come from various external sources. The availability of funding, though, has an important bearing on current and future economic activity. So my remarks today are structured around three key themes. First, I want to talk a bit about internal and external sources of funds and the way in which businesses use those funds. External finance has become available on increasingly favourable terms for large borrowers in Australia over recent years, including because of increased competitive pressures in this market. However, for the business sector as a whole, it's internal funds that are the key source of funding for investment. Growth in external funding has only a weak relationship with investment. Debt funding appears to be linked to mergers and acquisition activity, which up till now has remained relatively modest compared with the levels that we saw prior to the global financial crisis. The second issue I want to discuss is the experience of entrepreneurs who are seeking to start or expand a small business. They're typically more reliant on external finance, which remains difficult for them to obtain. Access to finance for such small businesses is important, though, since they generate significant employment growth, they drive innovation, and they help to boost competition in a range of markets. And then the third issue I'll cover is the potential to improve access to finance for entrepreneurs. Much of what I have to say today, particularly in those second topics, draws on information from the Small Business Finance Advisory Panel, which is something that the Reserve Bank has convened each year now for the past 25 years. We've gained a variety of perspectives by talking to entrepreneurs from a range of industries right across the continent. It's been an invaluable way to better understand the challenges that they face in their small businesses. But first, let me just start with some observations about the business sector overall as a whole. Data from the ABS, shown here on the balance sheet of the Australian business sector, shows that businesses are financed in Australia by around 60% equity and about 40% debt. Business debt is dominated by loans from financial institutions, with debt securities playing a relatively minor role. This capital structure is actually quite similar to most other comparable advanced economies. But the US, which is one we're often compared, is actually the outlier here. Bank loans are a much smaller share of business funding in the US. So if we start in the top panel of this chart, it shows that the primary source of new finance for Australian businesses is internal funding, and that is supplemented by funds raised externally. The primary use, if we look in the lower panel, the primary use of those funds is for productive investment in things such as commercial buildings, machinery, software, other forms of intellectual property. A non-trivial share, though, is used to pay dividends, to purchase financial assets, or for mergers and acquisitions. So it's well established in the literature that businesses prefer to finance investment using internal funds. Raising funds externally is more costly and can involve various sorts of restrictions being imposed on the managers. There's a lot in this chart, so I'll take you through it carefully. I think the key message is that internal funding is closely related to business investment. So they're similar in size, and this is evident in this graph, in which the dots for internal funding, they compare the level of internal funding in any given year to the level of business investment, and the way I've set it up, business investment the following year. And those dots are all clustered around the 45-degree line, so they're the same sort of size. Also, there's a clear positive relationship between internal funding and investment. The line of best fit slopes up fairly convincingly. In contrast, if we turn to the external funding dots in orange, the relationship between external financing and investment is less clear in the aggregate data. External financing is generally much smaller than investment. In other words, the orange dots lie mostly to the left and well left of the 45-degree line. And moreover, there's only a weak positive relationship between businesses' external funding and investment. Debt funding has moved more closely with mergers and acquisitions activity. For instance, in the period leading up to the global financial crisis, debt finance was used by a small number of highly leveraged firms to fund several mergers and acquisitions. Like the growth of external debt, listed equity raisings have been relatively modest over the past 10 years, with relatively little capital raised through initial public offerings. The overall message, though, is that external finance has become more readily available over recent years. Monetary policy, both in Australia and abroad, is very accommodative. Interest rates on business loans and corporate bonds are near historic lows. Accordingly, the interest rate being paid by businesses is around its lowest, the interest being paid by businesses is around its lowest level since the early 1960s relative to their operating profits, and that's shown here. Also, equity raising is relatively attractive at current valuations. A consistent message from business surveys, as well as from the bank's broader liaison program, has been that funding conditions have generally improved over the past 5 years. So that's on the supply. But despite that improvement, the demand for borrowing has been relatively moderate. Following the crisis, there was a significant deleveraging across the corporate sector, and subsequently, gearing ratios outside the resources sector have remained relatively low. And over recent years, non-mining business investment actually been growing, and the outlook for that investment has improved. But as I've already noted, firms have been able to finance that investment from internal sources. Even in the resources sector, while gearing rose after the financial crisis, it didn't reach the levels that had prevailed immediately prior to that crisis, and it's declined in the past couple of years. So that's for the business sector as a whole, but some parts of the business sector haven't seen the supply of external funding improve over recent years. The domestic banks, they've sought to constrain their exposures to the resources sector and commercial property, partly in response to prudential supervision from APRA. Also, small businesses, they continue to find it challenging to obtain external finance. Indeed, this could be one of the factors that helps explain why investment by small businesses, shown here in the darker line, why that has been unusually weak over recent years. So let me turn to that second theme, which is finance for small businesses. The challenge of obtaining finance has been a consistent theme of our small business finance advisory panel. In this context, I think it's important to just distinguish between two types of firms. The first type is the many established small businesses that are not expanding, and their needs for external finance, they're there, but they're typically modest. So that's one type of firm. The other type are the small businesses that are in the startup or the expansionary phase. They're trying to become medium-sized businesses. They're not generating much in the way of internal funding, and accordingly, those businesses have a strong demand for external finance. And I'm going to focus my comments in what follows on issues relevant to that second group of small businesses, the startups, the expanding businesses. Now, I should emphasise again that access to finance for those businesses is important because they generate employment, they drive innovation, they boost competition in a range of markets. Indeed, small businesses overall in Australia employ almost 5 million people, which is nearly half of employment in the non-financial business sector. So they're substantial. Compared with larger, more established firms, smaller, newer businesses, though, find it difficult to obtain the external finance since they're riskier on average and there's less information available to lenders and investors about their prospects. Lenders typically manage those risks by charging higher interest rates than for larger business loans, by rejecting a greater proportion of small business credit applications, or they might provide credit but on a relatively restricted basis. So the reduction in the risk appetite of lenders following the global financial crisis appears to have had a more significant and persistent effect on the cost of finance for small business than it had for large business. After the crisis, the average spread of business lending rates relative to the cash rate, that spread widened dramatically. The increase was much larger and more persistent, though, for small businesses, and you can see that in the left-hand panel of this chart. Now, in part, this increase owed to the larger increase in non-performing loans for small businesses than for large business lending portfolios. It's not clear, though, whether the increase in the interest rates being charged on small business loans relative to those charged on large business loans, at least over the past decade, reflects changes in the relative riskiness of the two types of loans, which are suggested by the lower panel in this chart. Over recent years, there's been strong competition for large business lending, and that's resulted in a decline, you can see here again in the left panel, in the interest rate spread on large business loans. Part of that competition from banks for large business loans has been driven by an expansion in activity by foreign banks operating in Australia. Large businesses also have access to a wider array of funding sources than small business, including corporate bond markets and syndicated lending. And, of course, the cost of raising funds in corporate bond markets is relatively low, as shown in the right-hand panel here. In contrast to that picture, competition has been less vigorous for small business lending. Indeed, some providers of small business finance were either acquired by other banks or they exited the market entirely following the onset of the global financial crisis. Also, the interest rate on small business loans, those interest rates have remained relatively high. And this difference in competitive pressures is evidenced in the share of lending provided to small businesses by the major banks. So that share is relatively high. The major banks account for 80% of lending to small businesses. And that compares with a share of around 2/3 in the case of large business loans. Small businesses continue to use loans from banks for most of their debt funding because it's often difficult and costly for them to raise funds directly from capital markets. The Reserve Bank's liaison has highlighted that if small business borrowers are able to provide housing as collateral, well, then that does significantly reduce the cost and increases the availability of debt finance for those borrowers. Lenders have indicated to us that at least 3/4 of their small business lending is collateralised, and they have only a limited appetite for unsecured lending. However, there are a number of reasons why entrepreneurs tell us that they find it difficult to provide sufficient collateral for business borrowing via home equity. So the first is they just may not own a home, or if they do own a home, they may have not much equity in that home if they're relatively young entrepreneurs. Similarly, they may not have sufficient spare home equity if they've already borrowed against their home to establish a business and now they want some extra financing to expand that business. And even if they have plenty of spare home equity, using their home as collateral concentrates the risks they face in the event of the failure of the business. They'd be out of a job and out of their home. Many entrepreneurs have limited options for providing alternative collateral, since banks are far more likely to accept physical assets such as buildings and equipment rather than soft assets such as software or intellectual property. So given the higher risk associated with smaller business, particularly startups, equity financing would appear to be a viable alternative to traditional bank finance. However, small businesses often find it difficult to access equity funding beyond what's issued to the business by the founders. Small businesses have little access to listed equity markets, and while private equity financing is sometimes available, its supply to small businesses is limited in Australia, particularly when compared with the experience of other countries. Small businesses also report that the cost of equity financing is high, and they're often reluctant to sell equity to professional investors, since this usually involves them giving up quite a bit of control over their own business. Let me turn to the third and final theme of my presentation, which is innovations, innovations that might help to improve access to business finance. So there are several innovations that could do that. They could help to improve access to finance by providing lenders with more information about the capacity of borrowers to service their debts, and by connecting risk-seeking investors with start-up businesses that could offer high returns. Comprehensive credit reporting, that will provide more information to lenders about the credit history of potential borrowers. So the current practice, the current standard, only makes negative credit information in Australia available publicly. When information about credit that's been repaid without any problems also becomes available publicly, then the cost of assessing credit risks will be reduced and lenders will be able to price risk more accurately. This may enhance competition because the current lender to any particular business will no longer have an informational advantage over other lenders which don't have that contact with the business. It may also reduce the need for lenders to seek additional collateral and personal guarantees for small business lending, particularly for those businesses which are already established. Indeed, the use of personal guarantees is more widespread in Australia than it is in countries that have well-established comprehensive credit reporting regimes, such as the US or the UK. For several years, the finance industry has attempted to establish a voluntary comprehensive credit reporting regime. Participation, though, has so far been limited. Several of the major banks have committed to contribute their credit data in the coming months, and the Australian government has announced that it will legislate for a mandatory regime to come into effect from mid-next year. So that could help. Another slightly related issue is open banking. The introduction of an open banking regime should make it easier for entrepreneurs to share all of their banking data, if they choose, in a secure fashion with third-party service providers, such as potential lenders. And when assessing credit risk, lenders place considerable weight on evidence of the capacity of the small business borrower to service their debts based on their cash flows. And for that reason, making that sort of data available via open banking, that would reduce the cost of assessing credit risk. A review is currently being conducted with the intention of introducing legislation to support an open banking regime in Australia. Large technology companies. Well, technology firms can use the transactional data from their own platforms to identify credit-worthy borrowers and provide loans and trade credit to those businesses from their own balance sheets. This could supply small innovative businesses that are active on those sorts of online platforms with a new source of finance. And a couple of examples are Amazon and PayPal that are providing finance to some businesses that use their platforms. For example, in the US, Amazon's identifying businesses with good sales histories and offering them finance on an invitation basis. Loans are reported to range from as small as $1,000 to as much as $750,000 for terms up to a year and for interest rates that range from sort of 6 to 14%. Another thing is alternative finance platforms. Alternative finance platforms, including marketplace lending, crowdfunding platforms, they use new technologies to connect fundraisers directly with the funding sources. And the aim here is to avoid the costs and delays that are involved in traditional intermediated finance. Now, while alternative finance platforms are certainly growing very rapidly, they're still a very minor source of funding for businesses, including in Australia, which you can see here. This is showing some estimates of the size of these sources of finance as a share of GDP. The largest alternative finance markets are in China, followed by the US and the UK. But even in those markets, if you look at the scale on this chart, they're relatively small compared to the size of their economies. Marketplace lending platforms provide debt funding by matching individuals or groups of lenders with the borrower. These platforms typically target personal and small business borrowers with low credit risk by attempting to offer lower cost lending products and more flexible lending conditions than traditional lenders. Data collected by ASIC indicate that most marketplace lending in Australia is for relatively small loans, as you can see here, to consumers at interest rates that are comparable to personal loans offered by the banks. It's unclear whether marketplace lending platforms are significantly reducing financial constraints for small businesses, though. Unlike the innovations I talked about just a minute ago, such as comprehensive credit reporting, which have the potential to improve the credit risk assessment process, marketplace lenders don't have an informational advantage over traditional lenders. As a result, they need to manage the risks with prices and terms on their loans that are in line with traditional lenders. Even so, those platforms could provide some additional marginal competition to traditional lenders, particularly as a source of unsecured short-term finance, since they process applications very quickly. They offer rates also that are typically well below those on credit cards. And then finally, crowdfunding platforms. They have the potential to make financing more accessible for startup businesses, although their use has been limited to date. Crowdsourced equity funding, those platforms typically involve a large number of investors taking a small equity stake in a business. And as a result, the entrepreneur receives finance without having to give up as much control as might be expected, for example, by a venture capitalist. And several legislative changes have been made to facilitate growth in these markets, including by allowing small unlisted public companies to raise some funds or equity funds from crowd sources. So let me just conclude. The provision of external finance to Australian businesses is dominated by the banks. Funding from that source has generally become available on increasingly favourable terms for large borrowers over recent years. Even so, much of the business investment is actually financed from internally generated funds, while the growth in business debt is more closely related to mergers and acquisitions activity, which has remained relatively modest compared with levels seen before the global financial crisis. Entrepreneurs starting or expanding a small business are typically more reliant on external finance, and that remains difficult to obtain. Lending to small businesses is dominated by the major banks, and there's less competition in this market. Interest rates paid by small businesses are also much higher than those paid by large businesses. It's not clear to me, at least, whether this difference reflects the greater risk involved in extending loans to small business. Entrepreneurs starting businesses often resort to personal credit cards for their day-to-day funding, while those seeking to expand their businesses are concerned by the collateral required to obtain funding at lower rates. There are several innovations that I've discussed that have the potential to improve access to finance, although their use to date has been limited. I think the most promising near-term development is mandatory comprehensive credit reporting, which has the potential to lower the cost of the credit risk assessment process for all lenders and reduce the need for entrepreneurs to provide personal guarantees and collateral. So let me stop there, Fari, and hand the floor over to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Just wonder whether there are some questions from the floor, please.
Do you want to just wait for the microphone?
Thank you very much. So my name is Karen Vent. I have a question regarding the comprehensive credit reporting. You said that for smaller businesses, the probability of default might be higher, although there might not be enough evidence to show that. So why or does the Australian scheme look also then into loss given default and recovery ratios rates? Because that's the important thing. So how big is the loss really when a default is given? And how does that connect to the comprehensive risk reporting? Thank you
right.
very much.
No, that's I think that's an important question. I don't have all the sort of data to hand. I alluded to some data which, as you suggested, yes, only talks about the sort of probability of default, not the loss given default, which is extremely important for the expected or the possible losses. If you go to the paper on the website, there's a little bit more discussion of that, which makes that point, and then alludes to the fact that for much of the small business lending, of course, it's backed by collateral. Much of that is housing, and of course, that means the bank not necessarily, the business may have defaulted, but the bank's not necessarily making substantial losses once they recover the collateral. So I don't know, and that's part of the reason why I don't know if those rates being charged on the small business loans are sort of fully reflecting that higher risk. The risk is higher. I think that's undeniable, but whether it's a sort of fully reflected is not clear. In terms of the, you know, the problem when you have an informational problem and you don't have enough information because the business, the information, even if it's for an established business, it may not be available, particularly their positive credit history, may not be available to banks. So the banks not having that will have to charge on average all businesses a little bit more because the business could be one with a poor credit risk, may not have such a positive credit history, may have no credit history. So the point about comprehensive credit reporting, if you can make that available to all the banks, they can sort of more accurately price the risk to each and every business depending on their credit history. I think that's the point I was trying to make.
Gabriel Noddy, UNSW. You showed a very large difference between small borrowers and large borrowers' rates. I'm just wondering if we have a continuum of the size of the borrowing, does that difference decrease significantly? So in other words, to some extent, it reflects the cost efficiency resulting from the size of the borrowing? Or do you think is there a step, a big step, once the so-called biz business gets above a certain size?
Yeah, I think. Well, that's a good question. I don't have the answer to that, partly because I'm not sure how granular the data is and on terms of sort of all of those rates and whether you can sort of do a nice, you know, I don't have the unit records on that, on the small business loans as they get bigger, as they turn into medium-sized businesses and then into large, how those rates on those loans transition. I think they're fairly coarse data and so it's hard to answer that question. It's a good issue, though.
With regard to large business, question here is globally, obviously, many large corporations slowed down the level of investment in the last 4 or 5 years. Do you think there could be any correlation between less demand for credit by large business due to external forces rather than only Australian factors, which could slow down maybe demand for borrowing by large corporations when we compare with small business? In other words, international factors in this process?
I think the international environment's had a very important influence on investment in Australia. I think that's why it's quite positive that we're seeing a fairly synchronised lift in business conditions, business profitability and business investment globally, particularly in many advanced economies, but not just in advanced economies, also in a range of economies right around the world. And I think what I don't know is, because I've only really peered into the Australian data, which just said, at least for the business sector as a whole, it's not true of small businesses, but at least for the business sector as a whole, it does seem a fairly, I think that dot plot that I showed is fairly convincing to suggest not that external finance and credit is unimportant for investment decisions, but it's the internal profits that kind of seem to be a better indicator, if you like, or more correlated with the investment. So as business conditions have picked up, which is true globally and in Australia, as profits pick up with that, businesses then look for opportunities and they have access to finance to undertake investment. And that's what's been happening, I think, not just in Australia but globally. Whether there's that tight link between internal funding and investment as tight as is in Australia? I'm not sure because I haven't looked into the international evidence.
My name is Mohammed Rahman. I'm from Canada. So, you know, there is an alternative source of financing these days we're talking about is ICO, the initial coin offerings using cryptocurrencies. And some of the central banks are taking very strong positions on that. So I was wondering what Reserve Bank of Australia has a position on that. What are you thinking about how to regulate this source of alternative financing, and or you have a position at all on this? Thank you.
Yeah, well, we don't have regulatory responsibilities in terms of the financing side of the equation. We have some responsibility once mechanisms move into the payment sphere, because we have a payment system board which has powers in that realm. I'd refer you actually to a speech the governor gave in another hotel this morning at a slightly different location earlier this morning on these sorts of topics, where he talked about, I know you talked about initial coin offerings, which is not unrelated to Bitcoin, but he talked about, at least with regards to Bitcoin, being of a speculative, highly speculative nature and not really constituting a payments mechanism. I think on the initial coin offering, what companies are doing is they're looking to raise funds and they're offering up these cryptocurrencies of one form or another. As people give them recognised currencies, US dollars, let's say, in exchange for coin offerings. And the thing that crosses my mind is, why are investors doing that in preference to actually taking a contract which is written down and more explicit and at least is a form of, let's say, if not debt, then equity, where they have some rights as owners of that company, and they're not doing that. So again, those feel like they have certain speculative elements which are not unrelated to the speculative elements of things like Bitcoin.